Hey everybody, welcome to this week's episode of the Liberty Squadron Podcast. My name is Andrew Lewinsky and I am joined with Marshall Staggs.
Hey everybody.
Jonathan Lee.
Hello everyone.
Chris Apple.
Hello.
And Zerk Katie.
Heyo.
It's a different name every week. Alright, so we got some news coming up. Yeah, not much. We had another separatist article drop, still no Republic. So we're going to go a little bit into that. Some people more excited about this stuff than the Republic.
Droid lives don't matter.
Whoa.
That's racist.
Is droid a race?
No, but they don't matter.
I'm just waiting for like an EMP bomb or EMP missile that just completely obliterates these things.
Yeah, that could be a cool thing for the Republic to have.
Yeah,
just
be like a cool Republic.
Reskin harpoon moodles.
maybe ion does damage. They add it to the fact.
Yeah, so we're gonna go a little bit over this separatist article, and then we are going to dive into turrets a little bit. Just talk about what we think about them, break them down a little bit. Just if we think they're good, if they need to be in the game, or what, or how they've changed since first edition into second edition. But let's jump right into the separatist article. We're not going to go over each card. We're going to just talk about them. I'm sure you've probably read the articles or heard about them on other podcasts. So one of the first things that I want to talk about are the treacherous EPT for the separatists. It's their equivalent to selfless and fearless and all that fun stuff. So just to recap, it says, while you defend, you may choose a friendly ship obstructing the attack and spend one charge. If you do, cancel one hit or crit result, and the ship you chose gains one strain token. After a ship at range 0 to 3 is destroyed, recover one charge. Well, I know I said we weren't going to read them, but I had to recap what it says.
Well, it's actually not any ship. Have to be a friendly ship.
Right.
So, yeah. So, much, much better than friendly ship. But yeah, it's this is an important one to read, I think, because I think it's going to be a confusing
thing for a bit.
Yeah, and it's also it might be like a core part of the faction identity in a way that some of the other, you know, like faction specific EPTs are not.
So just to explain this, right? Someone shooting at my ship, I pick one that's in the way of that shot that cancels a hit or a crit. And then the ship that was in the way takes a strain, which reduces its agility by one until you do a blue move or what?
Get shot at.
Defend.
Right.
Okay.
So
put something in front to negate damage.
Okay. Right. So first pass, I read this wrong. I thought it was when you were attacking, you could do that. And I was like, why would you ever spend a hit or crit to put a strain on something else? So that's why I was completely baffled. I was like, this card is terrible. But now that I'm reading it again...
I mean, that could actually work, right? As like a kind of weird split fire outmaneuvery thing, but it's
defense. Yeah, it's like you're giving your opponent like by triggering this card, you're giving your opponent like a bad choice if they have more ships to shoot, like you're like tempting them to not shoot at you again, basically.
I mean, it lets a swarm of vulture droids like screen a more important ship behind it.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking.
Yeah, this is going to be really good with that kind of list that we were talking about last time, where it's maybe like it's a Bulbasaur and four or five or six. I mean, who knows? A whole mess of Ultra Droids, I think.
I mean, the really funny thing is it's going to be the mirror match of this card.
Oh, geez. everything has strain tokens.
So I really like, though, that the last half of it. So it doesn't. It's one charge, but it recovers if things get blown up, right?
Right.
So that's actually kind of cool and thematic. So it's like, I don't know. That does actually interact sort of interesting. But there's like no, like it's 0 to 3. That's crazy. That's like really a large range.
The other thing I like about it is that it is not limited. So you could spread that damage around if you needed to. That if you're running everything with the same initiative, you could then throw the thing that has the spent charge in the front, encouraging them to shoot the thing that's in the back because it has a strain token. And then you could then basically mitigate all this damage by doing this.
It's a fun little puzzle. Like, I like the idea of having to work out like what to put in front and how to do that properly.
Right.
Also, for the record, Chris, you don't get to complain about range 0 to 3. Play Sloan.
Hey, my Sloan days are behind me, and I'm not Whatever. Complaining about it. I still
know they're in your past.
True, and I do break out Sloan from time to time if certain things crop up in the meta. But yeah,
Sloan, yeah, with her not being in hyperspace, that's probably a good thing.
That is a good thing. Yeah. No fun patrol.
Yeah, I mean, I think Treacherous will be good on the Belbalab. On the Sith Infiltrator, like a lot of those pilots are probably force sensitive, so they're not going to have EPTs.
Oh, yeah. Yeah,
like Maul. I think I first thought it'd be good on Maul, but he's not going to have this lot.
Yeah, I'm wondering if some of the, you know, multi-limited cards, I can't remember what exactly they're called, you know, the three-dot cards, if they give them EPTs, and then you have multiple Treacherouses in yeah. that front swarm oh, yeah. and a Bulbasaur behind it with Treacherous and just throw out all the strain.
Yeah, that's possible.
One thing to... Oh, go ahead, Andrew.
No, go ahead.
I was just going to say, I don't really need an answer to this, but reducing agility by one, I think, is sort of overblown as like being a powerful mechanic. Like outmaneuver, right?
I disagree.
Like it's okay, but it's not as like it feels worse than it is sometimes. Maybe I'd have to check the math on it, but
I disagree because largely, I mean, I think it's one of those exponential increases depending on how many agility dice you normally have.
Right, and you fly B-wings, so of course that feels real bad, right?
Yeah, no, it doesn't. Like I said, if you're flying a one die ship and you go down to zero die. Okay, you're expecting it on a one-die ship anyway.
Almost expecting it to have zero.
Right? Yeah.
Yeah. If you're a three agility ship with three health or four health, and you go down to two, that's really bad.
Mm.
Right. We don't see outmaneuver or wedge as like a metaphors, right? And I don't know that that is entirely detached from their mechanics, right?
So one of the things I want to talk about with this, the reduce of the agility, is the way that the evade tokens work now. See, like with the old evade tokens, if you had it, you could just stack it up and then it didn't matter. You got that evade back no matter what. Now with the math on you having that evade token with this reduced agility, it hurts a lot more, I would say.
Yeah, Zach makes a good point. It kind of depends on like how much health you had to begin with and how much you were expecting to take damage regardless. It all makes sense. Mine's more just a general point around like these types of mechanics don't typically dominate, right? Unless they're related to ordnance. Like ordnance is the one where it just seems to be really good all the time.
Yeah.
And I don't know how much of that is around like points perception, really. Like I think a lot of people balk at outmaneuver just because it's the most expensive APT.
Yeah, that 6 points is kind of it's a difficult hurdle to get over right. in and of itself, like divorced from the fact that it's like only situationally useful.
And a lot of times, like the choice between outmaneuver and a different card is one of defense versus offense. Yeah. And choosing defense is usually correct. So like with Guri, it feels good to shoot from out of arc and reduce agility, but you kind of want debris gambit sometimes. So it's, you know, it's sort of tough, but with this card, you get both a defensive mechanic and like your opponent sort of gets a little bit of an increase to split fire. Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah, cool. I mean, I think that's the other thing with that maneuver too, is the ships that really want to take it, the high initiative aces, generally have something else they want to take, or you're trying to keep them as cheap as possible because they might blow up real fast.
Right. Like, so like you're never going to put out maneuver on Fen really, because Fearless is stapled. Yeah. But like...
Soontir Fell you could, but again, you're trying to keep Soontir as cheap as possible.
Right.
In most cases.
Right. Strain tokens. I don't know. It's cool.
Yeah.
New mechanics, right? That's fun.
I'm a big fan of new mechanics that aren't things like conditions.
New mechanics, like, but more tokens.
It's less complicated than a condition, and like, I'm cool with it.
Yeah. Cool. So moving on, we're going to go into Television 94. While a friendly ship at 0-3 performs a primary attack against a defender in its bullseye arc, if there are two or fewer attack dice, it may spend one calculate token to add a hit result. So it's basically like advanced optics right now.
I'm so in on this card. It's
yeah. Awesome. So this is another tactical relay.
Yeah, tactical relay.
You can have one of this type of upgrade in your squad. And presumably it's going to go on the infiltrate, or maybe like high level vulture droids.
Precise like hunters.
Do we the know what solitary hunter means though? Because it says separatist and solitary.
Solitary means you can only have one of that type of card in your list.
So okay. It's during, so here from the article, during squad building, a player cannot hold more than one solitary card of the same upgrade type.
Okay. So you can only have one tactical relay, and that's
it.
I'm
pretty sure every tactical relay, there's only been two. Both of them had solitary on there, so I feel like all tactical relays are probably going to be solitary.
Right.
It's bullseye specific, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
I know I'm a broken record with this, but Bullseye is one of the coolest parts about 2.0. And this like doubles down on it because you have TV-94 and Precise Hunters both basically wanting to Bullseye stuff.
And if you bring TV-94, then you don't need to bring Energy Shell Charges. Because the Energy Shell Charges, you roll three attack dice and you can't. TV-94 only works if you roll two.
Yeah.
Yep.
Well, you can, but...
You did Iron Primary.
It's interesting. I definitely like it because with that, if you're bringing stuff with that many Bullseye Arcs, yeah, you're going to be creating these nets of just Bullseye Arcs, and sooner or later you're going to catch at least, you know, one or two of them.
Yeah, it varies by ship, right? So, like, catching Bullseyes with Interceptors is super easy. Like, catching them with the Seeks is a lot harder. Like, I ran HLC Seeks for a little bit, and that was, like, just a huge pain. But it was fun. It was just, like, casting that net isn't as easy, even if you have five ships, you know? It's like,
So
I need to reposition.
I mean, let's talk about that, though, because when you are doing something like casting HLCs to either get a four-dice attack or a two-dice attack versus the chance of you basically just getting a advanced optics in the Bullseye arc, I would say the two of them are a lot different. Because then this isn't like, it's like, cool, I got it. But it's not like I'm missing out on a four-dice attack. I'm not trying to get that four-dice attack.
It's better than advanced. It adds. It doesn't change a blank to
That's even better.
It adds a hit.
Yeah. So, I mean, the idea here is that you're going to roll up. You'll have the Precise Hunter lined up. You'll have one reroll and one added hit result. So you can afford to spend that calc on something other than an eyeball. Mm-hmm. Right?
Yeah.
And then the Precise Hunters, like all the Vultures, have a barrel roll into a red calculate. So you can kind of adjust where the bullseye is. I don't know. This is going to be fun.
Our poor pockets. They're just going to be like, listen, you need to run like 8 of these things.
Just buy 4 of those.
The big packs.
Servants or Strife packs. Yeah, you'll be fine. You'll have 3 Bulbasaurs that you're never going to use. But
hey, you might use 2 in a list. You might go Grievous and Seer plus a bunch of Vultures, you know?
Or just don't play Separatists.
And you'd be wrong, Zach. Be
Let the
wrong.
Past factions die. Kill them if you have to.
Oh, man. Somebody's waiting for Jedi.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I think his name is Marshall.
That's what I think Zach's with me on that one, yeah.
Maybe. Can't prove it.
I'm excited for this a little bit.
I'm excited to see what people do with it. I'm not excited to be the person figuring that out.
Like, I feel like Separatists, the entire faction, was like made for me. Like, it's just, this is what I want to play. Like, but
this
I can
is
see...
why you're a bad person.
Oh, thank you. Oh boy, no politics of any kind. No, I'm just talking about like the fact that there's no I6.
That is super interesting to me. Yeah.
And that they have to make it okay without an I6.
Yeah.
Like that alone.
They have to give
excited.
It something else to do that's so good that it doesn't matter that they don't have an I6.
Right.
I'm really curious to see how that pans out.
Yeah. And then like it's a really clear indicator to the player base. Like faction identity, I don't really care too much about in general from a gameplay point of view. But it's sort of interesting when an entire faction's built around a type of gameplay because it directs the like a broader base of players to that kind of game. So I just, you know, we talked a while ago about swarms and why they don't get picked up. Like this is FFG's chance to be like, fly swarms. We know you don't like the TIE swarm. No one wants to use that. So
yeah.
Use this, you know?
Yeah. I'm excited for it. It's like the game that we know right now, like with throwing this into it, it's going to be completely different. Like, just even going up against it, like, you're just going to have to change so much how you play the game, and it's really going to throw a wrench into the gears.
I want to hear more people complaining about, like, the barrage rocket problem, right? Like, that's a good problem to hear people complaining about.
Yeah.
But, like, if vultures lead to that kind of thing where it's like, I got outjousted by 8 vultures. Yes.
You played it wrong. Did you joust it?
Well, and then, like, you know, the more complicated questions come up, which is the interesting ones. But I don't know. Like, the ships themselves actually are part of the hype here, right? Like, I keep looking at the vulture models, and they're actually, like, look at the paint job on those.
Yeah, they look super cool. I wonder if the wings rotate. That's not what we've seen yet, but that'd be interesting. Like, when you flip the landing struts cards, you, like, rotate the wings down, so it kind of looks like they're standing up.
Yeah,
I don't know. Like, that'd be cool. They seem to be more inclined to do that, but even if they don't, I mean, they still look pretty dope.
I can't really tell from the images, but I'm sure people would get a kick out of that.
So, okay, so, like, segueing into our next topic then, what are you guys most excited to see with... we've got almost all the ships. I think we're still waiting on the... what is the Maul ship?
The Infiltrator.
The Infiltrator, right. We're still waiting on the full release of that, but other than that, we've got a lot of these cards, and what are your first impressions of this? Zach, why don't you go first?
My limbs for 10 minutes is going to go way up.
Your what?
My limbs per 10 minutes are going to go way up.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
So many things exploding all over.
Playing against it, that's a good call, man. Like, you're going to get a chance to shoot stuff, for sure.
It's going to be great. That part I'm going to enjoy. I'll very much like that. I don't know. I'm hoping there's more to be spoiled, which there obviously is.
Yeah, there's a whole mess of upgrade cards that I don't think we've seen.
Anymore. And, like, I agree. I like that it has its own identity. I like that it's different. I'm just not sure that it works yet, but happy to be proven wrong.
Right. And so one of the things that, like, I had a conversation with someone about Legion, and it was like, when I first started playing it, it was like, I was like, this, I'm not into this game. But then the more it grew, the better it got. So this might be one of those things where it's like, okay, it's kind of rough right now, but as it gets more ships that could change the mechanics of this entire faction, it might be interesting to see how it does evolve.
Well, so, but, like, that's what's interesting to me about the faction, right? Like, I think a huge percentage of the player base just looks at this faction and they go, no aces, it's probably bad, right?
Sure.
Yeah. Like, so I just, like, I'm super excited to see FFG solve that problem. Because yeah. if they can't ace their way out of it.
That problem I'm down for. It's the really wonky dials and a 2 agility, 3 hull ship.
Correct. Yeah, there's some possibility here that it's just out the gate gonna be at a disadvantage. I completely agree there.
Like, I don't know. I'm interested to see, like, the points cost on the Vulture droids, because at face value, no matter what they put it at, they're overcosted.
Right. Well, so let's get into that, though.
I don't know, but their ship ability is so good, and I think that where it's going to be a thing where it's going to be overcosted if you look at just the raw stats of the ship, but when you consider it as, like, when you consider its role and the way it's used as a whole in the entire faction, I think if they're TIE fighter priced, that won't be, like, egregious.
Well, hold on, though. So, like, price point, I think you can get kind of specific, right? Like, Initiative 1 Vulture has to be 20 points or less, right? Like, there's... Yes. Like, it has to be 20 points or less. 20 points might be the upper range of that.
So, mathematically, yeah. But the dial is so bad, though. Yeah, the dial's so bad.
Well,
so
just bad. Compare, and, right? Like, and C95.
And we don't know how much the landing struts things cost. And okay, all right.
And it's not, like, a huge deal, right? Because if it's 20 points, they can't fit more than 8 anyways. But I think.
Yeah, that restriction also does put it in perspective, too, I guess. Yeah, okay. No, I got you.
Now, whether or not any of it works, I mean, well, who knows?
Immediate. So now that I put a damper on everything, everyone else likes it.
I like that the dials are different, that they're experimenting with like different dials. I may be the only one, but I like the fact that the Vulture droid dial is different.
No, yeah, I definitely like that too, just because it's like it is very different, that it's something that you didn't expect.
I mean, I picture it. I know I've said this somewhere before, maybe not on the podcast, but I picture them as flying like a school of fish. A school of fish makes those weird, sudden, hard turns.
Mm-hmm.
Like if you see them swimming in a gigantic aquarium, and then they set their flies going this way, and suddenly too hard. You know?
Well, and like swarms do that, right? Like that's normal for swarms to kind of do a straight maneuver, and then, you know, not do a two bank, but do a two hard in, right?
Yeah.
But I could see like three banking and then two harding, and it just like I just think it would be interesting.
And they're fast too, right? They got a 5-4 at all of them.
And like,
yes.
And if you look, it's actually kind of like a B-wing dial if you look at it. In some way,
it's got a short K turn.
It's a short K turn, two short talon rolls. The three banks are red. It's slightly better. It's better than the B-wing dial.
I got to confirm the speed on these things again.
It's slightly better than a B-wing dial, but it's something that just doesn't want to get shot at. That's kind of my issue. Like a B-wing dial is what it is, because B-wings are going to get shot at, and that's fine. They have 8 health.
Yeah. Well,
these things don't really want to get shot at with 3 health and 2 agility.
Right, which is why they need to be expendable, right? Like the faction has to be built around the idea of them being expendable. Which that's maybe they can't balance that. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm interested to see it. I think part of this is coming off of like minor levels of PTSD with like Imperials in 1.0 that had way too many abilities that triggered off of damage or something bad happening to you, and how quickly they fell off towards the end, kind of because of that.
So I'm thinking about this, and with the way that these dials are, I'm curious if the way that the turns are better than the banks, if that somehow has to do with the math, if FFG's actually thought this out, that the math of casting these bullseye arcs is better when you basically have these giant arcs doing turns rather than banks.
So I sketched some of that out. Like if you have a lot of the bullseyes kind of go in very specific areas, right? So like if you do a three bank with a bunch of ships, or like one ship, for instance, if you do like a three bank with one ship, and you do just barrel roll, where are the options for the bullseye, right? If you do a two hard and some barrel rolls, and you end up with like these just kind of like ship base wide ranges that you can land in. It's the kind of thing where like I'm probably going to build a list that has Seer and Grievous in it, right? So like simplifying it, I put Grievous down somewhere, and then I put a whole bunch of Vultures down in another area. And whichever side you choose to go after punishes you, right? Like, whether or not you're in Bullseye, if you go after the Vultures instead of Grievous, Grievous is going to come for you. Like, that's probably tactically what this faction looks like. You put Maul down and some Vultures and pick your joust, right? Hope you're not wrong.
Yeah.
That kind of thing. And then it's all blocks in between.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'm really curious to see the rest of the Sith Infiltrator pilots and Maul in general. I've got very high doubts on it, but I kind of want to see it in action before I dismiss it completely.
Right. The
only thing I was like, you know, if these things are like with large base ships, we've all seen that they are on the higher side of the points range. I'm curious if you're just, I mean, I guess with how cheap the Vulture droids were, speculating could be, you might be able to fit close to 6 ships and one of these if they are as cheap as people are making them out to be.
Yeah, well, so that's what I'm describing, right? Like, I'm fully expecting to be able to run Grievous, Seer, and like a decent number of Vultures, right? Like that seems entirely reasonable.
I think that's probably what they're going for, yeah.
Which to Zach's point, if those numbers are high enough, expendable becomes playable.
Cool. All right. Anything else that we want to touch base before we move on? Before the
clouds?
Well, yeah, that's what I was going to move on to. But
okay.
Did you have something, Chris?
We can move to the clouds. I did just want to touch on the Grievous kind of titles.
Yeah.
We can do the clouds first.
No, yeah, do Grievous and then.
Well, so I'm just like looking at the soulless one. It essentially lets you reroll a defense die if you're outside of, if the attacker's outside of your firing arc.
Right.
So this seems like pretty solid. Like it at least looks fun on paper, right? To load up Grievous with soulless one and then the impervium plating, which prevents, I guess, crits from happening to you.
Based on ship damage cards. Ship crits, right?
Yeah. Right. Which could be serious issues. I don't know. But like the idea of loading up Grievous as an I4 kind of ace, he's not actually an ace. He's just like going to punch reasonably consistently. The price point on that to me is really interesting. I don't know where that's going to land, but it's hard for me to look at that and see something that's over, you know, too high above Wedge's cost. If it approaches like 60 points, like things get a little crazy.
Yeah, it could be more than Wedge, certainly. I mean, even just based on the PS, like, or the initiative.
Right.
Yeah.
So that just kind of leads into, will I have to choose between Seer and Grievous? Can I take both? I'll leave it there. That's kind of what immediately stands out to me.
So, yeah, there are so many cool I-4 pilots that are just, like, completely dwarfed by this, like, I-5 meta that we're in. And it would be cool to see this pop up in a hyperspace as something more playable, because anything that I-5 is just stomping anything lower than it right now. So,
right, with some exceptions.
Yeah, right, right, right.
Tanky, if it's countdown. You know, there's some I-4 things that can get it done, Zach. But
You know, I just noticed the soulless one adds 2 hull.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I did not notice that super, until right now.
Good,
yeah, you can make it super tanky.
That alone is going to be worth its points.
Right. So, like, 60-point Grievous, I guess, is what I'm describing here. That it's just really consistent damage, potentially, if your opponent makes the wrong choice. I don't know what the right choice will be yet. But like I'm such a huge fan of Lone Wolf as a card. Rerolls are really good when they're native, like all of that, right? And Grievous just gets to do some of that with a little bit of setup. And I think that's really neat.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. Anything else? Cool. All right. Let's move on to the new, what are they? The Ion Clouds? Nebulas?
Gas Clouds.
Gas Clouds, yeah. So we got some new obstacles. We don't know we know half of what they do. We still haven't figured out. They haven't said anything what they do if you fly through them, if you take damage, if you take ions, whatever. But what we do know is that it's basically old auto thrusters. When you are being shot through these gas clouds, you will get the added die and you can automatically turn one of your dice results into an evade. With old auto thrusters, it was only misses. Could you still do that? Or is it like...
It's blanks.
It's blanks. Or... It's not I results either. Okay.
I don't... Oh.
I'm pretty sure it was because just blanks.
Well, auto thrusters was blanks.
Right, right, right. But I think this is blanks as well. I'd have to double check that.
It is just blanks.
Right.
According to the article.
So yeah, they're a little bit... unless you're running Vulture Droids with the title, people are probably going to be taking these just natively now.
Well, both players get that evade though, right? Like if I'm on one side of the ion cloud and you're on the other.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
We both get the evades, right?
Right. What if this is like the counter to trick shot?
yeah, sure.
I mean, if they're anticipating trick shot with like trick shot Han being that good, that this is just their way of saying no.
You could just raise the price of trick shot.
Yeah, I guess.
Seems easier.
But this doesn't feel like a response to trick shot, though.
No,
right?
no, absolutely not. But
like that's.
I think it's an inadvertent consequence of them, but I don't think that was their original intent.
Yeah, absolutely. Blackout's probably going to have a ball with these things.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of this comes down to what's the negative consequence of flying over one, right? Where. You know, like how dangerous is it to actually be in front of that thing?
Yeah.
Is it like an immediate damage? That would be bad.
Yeah.
Right. You don't even roll for it. You just take a damage right away.
You immediately get blinded pilot.
Like 1.0 blinded pilot immediately. Oh. It's bad.
Well, I mean, like I can see something like you get ionized or take a ion token. That would be probably just as bad, because then your opponent's going to know like almost two turns where you're going to be at, especially if you're flying.
I could see them giving the strain token since they're both new to this.
Definitely the strain tokens. But if it was something like an ion token, like that would be terrible. So it might make you think twice.
It does have ion in the name. That is true.
From a gameplay perspective, it would be really funny if it gives out a strain, seeing as its one side is giving you an agility, its flip side is taking an agility away.
Yeah.
That would be really funny.
Now, I assume you couldn't like do a blue maneuver over the ion and end without the strain.
I mean, be the same way as doing like a blue maneuver over debris, right?
Yeah, same order of operations, I guess.
Yeah.
All the same rules. That'll be neat. Hopefully they'll spoil that soon, because I'd like to test with that a little bit.
So yeah, it's going to be some new obstacles to play around with on top of your 12 other obstacles. Throw them in there with that.
So one thing, can we say this kind of outright? Like, this isn't something that anyone should be panicking about.
No, no. Right? No, which is really funny because, oh look, they even have Trickshot in this spread. The first day that they released these, everyone was like, oh my god, Auto Thrusters, it's back, blah, blah, blah. Like, no. Like, how many times do you actually have to measure through those, like, anything? Like, I mean, sure, it happens maybe, like, once or twice a game, but it's not like you're going to be able to just sit there and circle these gas clouds and get Auto Thrusters the entire time. And if you are, you're probably not getting shots off. So, granted, there is some asteroid play and trying to add some, you know, results, but I don't think it's going to be game-changing.
I'd really love to just have a turret with Trick Shot, though, like a fat turret, and just circle around a big cluster of these things, and
which exists,
always
right?
Have Trick Shot and always have basically a reinforce.
I mean, on the flip side, though, you're giving the defender in that same shot.
Yeah, not if you have Trick Shot. Well, yeah, okay.
Away your Trick Shot, essentially.
Oh.
Because it's just going to cancel one out.
I think, so like, the latest wave with Resistance, right? I've been playing a lot of games where the A-Wings are constantly getting Trick Shot off because they're super maneuverable. Their hard turns are really easy to line up. And they just set up that rear arc and do some Trick Shots. Like, maybe that'll become more common, but my main thing was saying we shouldn't panic about these is what we were just saying there, is both players get the advantage.
Well, yeah, it's like any other.
Well, no one's up in arms about Trick Shot, so.
Well, they should be. That's a conversation for another day.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting just, again, changing the game with not so much like in a big way with the clouds, but it's interesting to see that they're adding new obstacles and maybe even future obstacles that they could throw down the line.
Yeah, it's strange that they have not explored this design space sooner. Like, we're six. Well, I guess when did we get debris clouds? We got debris clouds with wave 4.
Wave 5.
Decimator. Know,
wave 4 or 5. Yeah, it was Decimator and Outrider.
Yeah.
So it's been, I don't know, it's been 4 or 5 years since we've gotten a new asteroid. Or a new obstacle type, I should say. We got new asteroids in the new core set, but I think it's about time. I'm excited.
I'd like to see, like, in tandem with this release, something done with collision detector, but yeah, we'll see what happens. But because collision detector kind of invalidates some of what they can
what
do in that
collision
space.
Detector say? Does it say obstacle, or does it say asteroid or debris cloud?
I don't know specifically.
Save me, Yasby.
Optical. But even just like, you know, if there is a negative cost,
obstacle. Okay.
Right. So if there's a cost to going over it, that collision detector can kind of get you around. Like, I'm not a huge fan of that card to begin with as a mechanic.
Sure.
It's not like it's game breaking, but it's sort of, it just inhabits this weird space that takes away from what could be a really interesting space, which is just avoid things that are on the table that don't move.
Cool.
You say that like it's easy.
I mean, be aware that this week, I think I did about 8 damage to a TIE Reaper on just obstacles. Now, there was a whole breach involved, but...
Wait, you flying over the obstacles?
Yes.
Oh. Okay.
So, it's you know, you can intentionally do some pretty dumb things with adaptive ailerons, so...
Sure.
That does happen. But yeah, I don't know. I just like, I think Marshall, you're right on the money with, they haven't done much with this for a while. At least there's no way to move them, right?
Can you blow them up with seismic?
Beckett!
You got Beckett.
Yeah, I think seismic, you can blow them up.
Seismic got away. Seismic is just obstacles, right?
Yeah.
You lit that gas cloud on fire.
Yeah, sure.
That'd be plus interesting.
One. Makes sense.
Yeah, exactly.
I honestly was expecting if they were going to, because this is something I've been, I was going to use the word fantasizing, but that's not exactly it. It was something I was speculating a lot about, is that when would they release the next obstacle type? And I could have sworn it would have been ion clouds, where it obstructs as normal, but if you run over it, you get an ion token. I wonder if that is something like, or maybe we'll get an ion storm or something. But this is also cool. I mean, but I could have sworn that they would have done something with ion first, because it's been around for so long. But maybe this is an ion thing. Maybe you run through it and you get an ion token.
Yeah, it would have been interesting to do it tied to Scum Han, because I mean, it does appear in Solo.
Yeah.
Oh, sure. Yeah, they go through that. They go through the. What's it called? What do they call it in Solo? I don't know.
The Kessel Run.
Yeah, is that what I was like? Are you talking about the Kessel Run?
Is this a Star Wars Kessel game? I don't really know anything about Star Wars.
By the look of the Sith Infiltrator, I thought this was Battlestar Galactica.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah, so anyway,
a lot of the Separatist ships all kind of do like look like Cylons a little bit.
So we talked a little bit about the new obstacles and trickshotting around with turrets, but so that'll segue us into this next topic of our turrets. We've had some opportunities to test around with it. We have some opinions about it, some strongly one way, some strongly the other way. So, who wants to kick this off? Because I know I want to play the good guy here.
I don't know, Chris, you made all these beautiful notes. Why don't you?
Chris, you did suggest the topic, so.
Sure. Well, so I wanted to talk about this because it's like another one of these things like bombs that has a lot of history from 1.0, right? That I don't think X-Wing community in general has sort of gotten over yet, or like, you know, kind of forgotten. So like talking about turrets in a way that makes sense and understanding how they fit into the game in terms of like meta balance, but also just what they bring to the game that's interesting and mechanically interesting. That's mostly what I'm interested in, right? To actually discuss that. But the other side of it is just this general kind of statement that we probably don't want to play turret wing again, right? Like the majority of the player base, I think, I might be kind of saying something that's not true here, but I think the majority of the player base wants to play Ace Wing or Small Base Forward Arc Wing and doesn't want to play Turret Wing or Bomb Wing, right? Now, what Turret Wing means now is a very different thing, so this is like a less significant topic than it used to be. But it might become really relevant with a couple of point adjustments, so that's, I guess, an intro to the topic, Andrew, is like all of that, right?
Right.
Well, I think to assuage fears from the get-go, I don't see it ever being 1.0 turret wing again, just because there's skill involved now. And this is coming from someone who flew a lot of Han.
Yeah, I don't think we'll ever get something that functions the way a 360 degree turret, which I mean, people were freaking out about Luke Skywalker gunner, and that turned out to be prohibitively expensive. So I feel like the design team is aware that this is a thing that should not exist in the game, at least on a competitive level. So I don't think it's okay. Something right. We have to worry
so
about.
so let's before we go any further, right? So like if that's, I think we agree on that, right? That like 360s are sort of past. Right, the Star Fortress might be the closest thing we have besides the gunner. Sure. You know, the 270 degree exists, but just to quickly define a turret before we move on, because I think it helps. Anything that doesn't have a locked forward primary arc, I think you can consider as a turret for this conversation, and I can just get more specific. But you know, when you have more arc coverage, what that allows a ship to do, and how you like assess that changes. because you can't be overly negative when it's like, yeah, it's only 180 coverage, right? But there's still something there that it's doing that's very powerful and very different than a standard ship, right? So it's a turret.
I mean, would that be... So would you define a turret as a ship that can put its arc wherever it wants? Where, or...
It gets fuzzy. So like for this specifically, I would say a turret is any ship that can either rotate its arc or has a forward, backwards, or a 180, right? Just anything more than that primary forward. I think, you know, you can say loosely that a Defender, Guri, Super Primed Kylo, they all function essentially like kind of turrets. They can just always go where they need to, but there are significant differences even there. Turret is more than a forward arc, I think. Right. That's
because with ships like Kylo, you can put your firing arc wherever you want to put it, but then you have to make decisions the next turn that are different from the decisions you would have to make if your arc was pointed in a certain way and you did not have to maneuver in that direction. Like if the front of your ship, there's a big difference between where your arc is and where your ship is physically pointed.
Right. Like the closest parallel is the rotation mechanic, right? Yeah. So I have a bullet listed here, and this is probably the more fun thing to get into is like, what about turrets are challenging now that makes them more mechanically interesting? Like if you look at the rotate action, rotating or having a 180 that you can just turn is roughly the equivalent of like an offensive or defensive reposition in my mind, right? Because you can rely on the rotate to go to a spot that a normal ship couldn't, not take shots and still fire, right? Yeah. And that effectively is an offensive or defensive reposition. It sometimes is both. So like even dash, right? Even if you're not rotating your arc, but you just like hard turn onto a rock that no one else can do, you've arc dodged and barrel rolled back or something like that. Now you're truly repositioning. But like that whole thing of it replaces sort of a mechanical space that small base forward ships rely on boost and barrel roll for, mm-hmm. right? That's what it does. Most of these turrets don't have a boost with them. The ones that do are like relevant, but rotate is like, what challenge do you want, right? Do you want a ship that can't reposition a lot that you want to avoid rotating with to get maximum action economy? Mm-hmm. Or do you want a ship that can reposition a lot, but you want to avoid repositioning a lot with to get maximum action economy? It's like, that's kind of, like, what playstyle do you prefer is sort of where, I guess, these turrets land. Mm. I don't know if any of that really made sense. It's kind of how I think about it, right? Is like, these big base turrets got the rotate action, so they're not allowed to reposition as easily. That type of thing.
So there's two things that I want to touch base on that. The ones that do have a reposition, it's close to say that they almost still have that 360 degree arc, especially with the boost. Because I've been doing a lot of testing with Boba and Han, and you put Han with an engine upgrade on there, you do a one bank or a three bank, whatever bank, and you then have the option to boost, especially Han being at such a high pilot skill. He then can see almost the complete field and never has to change his arc. He can literally just boost whichever way he needs to go to make sure he's getting shots in.
Right. And Boba does the exact same thing.
Exactly.
Anything with the rear arc is leaning into this. Like, everyone's super hyped about RZ, like the Resistance A-Wings. They're really fun, don't get me wrong. But they are turrets because that's what they do. Mm-hmm. Right? Like, they focus boost and they defensively reposition and take a three-dice shot out the back. Right? Like that's like if you look at the breakdown that we have below here, right? Like the only turrets right now that I think are competitively viable or even competitively average have some kind of reposition ability. And I don't think that's like an accident. It's when you get both a rotate and a reposition, you're basically doubling down on like this entire space.
Yeah, it's the equivalent. It's the equivalent of put your ship wherever you want. It's put your firing arc wherever you want.
Yeah. I mean, if you're choosing to rotate or you're choosing to boost, I mean, you're spending your action to do that. I mean, is it really that different than, I don't know, say Fen Rao coming up? So, and then being like, oh, you're over here. Oh, I'm going to barrel roll. And now I have you in my arc.
Here's where it gets tricky is if you are spending your action to get now to get some kind of passive mod, either be trick shot, be Han getting his rerolls with being in a close to an asteroid, if it's Boba Fett getting in range one of X amount of enemies, it's absolutely worth it. I don't think that something with a turret arc, unless it's something like the A-Wing or a specific like ability that requires your arc to be in a specific spot, I don't think you should ever be changing that arc.
Well, so I think both are kind of interesting points. One thing that I should caveat, and I kind of mentioned it already briefly with Dash, is that these kind of like additional arc ships are able to arc dodge without repositioning. So they don't necessarily, you know, deny themselves taking a focus action because they can do dumb things like turning away from combat or going to a spot and still shoot, right, without repositioning. Like, I think that's sort of undersold. Like, that's the hard part maybe for the ones that can't, is sort of like figuring out how to set up an engagement where you can do a hard, you know, a hard two turn or a three bank and literally do something that, you know, most ships would have to do a 4K turn for, right? And then just focus. Like, that, it's kind of like arc dodging with a big base turret, right? Used to be that just Rack would just boost around and have infinite actions. But now, like, solving the turret puzzle is maybe a combination of knowing when to rotate, but also knowing how to set up an engagement where you can turn away from combat and still do damage. That kind of stuff.
No, absolutely. And like I said, I've been doing a lot of testing with Rebel Han recently. And like, I guess if you're running Scum Han, you could do it with Kira on the ship too. But because you want to stay so close to the asteroid field and try to navigate your way around that, you can do these crazy things where you are boosting out of arc and you're denying these spots because you want to be in this asteroid field and you may not. You might be blocking their paths that they need to go to actually try to like either get actions or get a solid arc because they have to navigate around this field. And because you're moving last, you can absolutely block these lanes for them. If you throw a boost in there, it gets even worse.
Right, which is why they've been super, like, very conscious of not putting boost on too many things with turrets, big base turrets, this version, right? Yeah. Like, that's... there's crazy powerful. The Millennium Falcon gets to do it, right? The Fire Spray gets to do that, and the K-Wing can slam, right? Those are the exceptions to the rule. Like, Dash can barrel roll. That's all crazy. You've been running a Falcon a lot, basically Rebel Han.
Right.
How much do you circle strafe, right? Like, how much are you not engaging at all? Because there's this interesting dynamic now where a lot of people in 1.0 used to joust with turrets, and it was like, that was the thing that always drove me nuts, right? Is because like a lot of the best turrets were also the best jousters. So someone would just kind of joust and then also lean into whatever the turret was doing. Mm-hmm. I don't know that you can do that now.
Absolutely, right? Not. Like, that's the thing, is like one of the first engagements you kind of want to do is you want to kind of draw them into that asteroid field and you want to get the hell out of there. If you know, you know, they're going to have the better joust. Where, like, going off of what you're saying, I mean, look at, like, Nim Miranda back in 1.0. You could literally just load them up with ordnance, fire away, do as much damage you could, and then an opening joust, and then you could just close out the game by TLTing something to death. And you can't do that anymore.
Right. So, like, let's name the turrets that can joust, right? Like, Fire Sprays definitely can joust. Possibly anything with reinforce can do that, right? So like, I know we all probably agree that the Decimator is in a really bad place, right?
Sure.
Like, it's, yeah. But if you look at the reinforce action, it's not bad. Like, reinforce is really pretty good and allows you to do some kind of things you wouldn't normally do with a zero agility ship.
Elaborate on that, because like, what though? Like, what do you joust with it? Do you just run it in and just do one forwards until you like have to escape? Like what do you do with that ship?
Right. Well, so like Rak can take a proton torp, right? Dengar can, sure. Dengar wants to joust, right? Like these are turrets in quotes that like what if you just approached them like a forward arc ship, right?
Okay.
Like that's I think when people look at the Lancer right now, and there's definitely folks that can speak to this better than I can, but that kind of wants to have things in its forward arc because it's where the damage is coming from, right? And like, does that loosely mean that playing the Lancer correctly means kind of jousting?
Well, that's always been the case with the Lancer, I feel like. And Zach, maybe this is a good time for you to jump in with your Ketsu experimentation, but. Yeah. I feel like it was that way in 1.0 as well.
Yeah, I mean, I think it definitely wants to be a little bit more of a jousting ship. It's just difficult for it to really be a jousting ship because it wants to go fast as a big base ship. And that does not equal good jousting.
Right, so the speed thing is really interesting. And that I actually find, like, that's always been cool about the Lancer is how crazy fast it was on a big base and having to solve that. Right. But, you know, before we even go there, what happens if the Lancer is a decent at jouster, right? Like they do something that makes it capable of jousting and it's still able to turn away and do consistent damage, right? Like that's the do we want to play turret wing? Do we want to play ace wing kind of question, right? Which is how good can these types of multiple arc ships be allowed to become, right? I don't know if I have a super strong opinion one way or the other because we're so far into Ace Wing that like generics aren't going to save us, so maybe turrets have to.
It's such a fine line, though. It's because I feel like even one little tweak too many just pushes it over and then it's all turrets all the time. Like we almost got it with, I mean, we didn't almost get it with Dash Rourke, but Dash Rourke, I feel like was a very interesting taste of what that could be. Is that like, if we're not careful, if we give them like just the right combination of elements, like it can be super problematic. And I think it really comes down to in that specific case, just Han Gunner basically. But
Well,
I think we know, and it did not. I mean, it did not take much for that to become a problem. Like, I don't think it was a function of the way Dash works. I don't think it was a function of Rourke's ability. I don't think it was a function of coordinate necessarily. Like, it was really Han Gunner and those like the two shots at Initiative 7 that was, I feel like, the thing that really pushed it over.
So let's cover that off real quick.
That only works in that one specific case. Like you can't do that with any other combination of upgrades or ships. So that's why I feel like it's not, I mean, it is super crazy, but it's not like, it's not a template for this kind of thing that can work on multiple ships.
I mean, but it is something people have been asking for, though. It's like people have been saying these big base turrets are only good if they can double tap. Like, I think that's a trap. That can't be used as a solution to it.
Yeah, that's a crazy opinion.
No, that's groupthink at its worst.
What were you going to say?
No, it's good. I mean, then the question is, how good should a 140-point ship be?
Oh,
yeah.
Well,
I mean, if the ship costs, I don't know the answer, but if a ship is 120, 130, 140, how good should it be?
That's a great question. So yeah. I think look at Boba, right? Like, I don't even know what correct cost on Boba is, but would you want a single ship in the game that's any more powerful than that? Probably, right? A little more powerful. Like, some of these big base ships maybe need to fit into that category, but it can't be like too much more. Right? It can't be too much more above the S tier level that Boba is. I think Boba's S tier, right? Like, you can say that. Is that okay?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, like, if you could buy for 140 points a better Boba, would you? Yes.
Well, but the S tier Boba that you're buying is 105 something, a little around 100.
Yeah.
I mean, you have to think of it. It's hard to, because there's not like a good example other than Dash, but it's hard to think of. It's hard to like scale it up.
To
like power versus points cost, because I feel like the power of it and what creates that power is kind of unknown.
So it's a good segue into maybe for the, this is a good time to just summarize the tiers of some of the turrets real quick.
Yeah. Oh, sure.
So, and this is not, I don't even know how accurate this really is, right? This is just some thoughts that we had, right? In general.
But so I mean, our feelings are the only things that matter, I feel like.
Okay. Well, I mean, like, I'm probably, like, I don't feel like I ever get points correct. I'll put it that way. I have directional opinions on them, but how
no, but I think we can make judgments based on what we see in the meta and what we've played around with and what people are using. Like, I don't know. I feel pretty confident in this list.
But. Okay, so just to rattle this off, right? There's a whole group of turrets that fit into average tier, possibly good tier. They're at least costed close to correct, right? Possibly under-costed. I have most of these labeled in quotes as like turret aces. So the attack shuttle is basically an ace with Sabine. The K-Wing is definitely...
Yeah, it's really just Sabine, right?
Yeah, and like some of these ships, like, there are absolutely undercosted pilots within there, or overcosted pilots within there. Like, this is just generalization, but the attack shuttle kind of fits in the average tier for sure. The K-Wing, I think, does as well. It's just kind of underplayed.
I disagree there, but that's just me.
No, that's fair. And you can like maybe the K-Wing's actually got to have a small point cost tweak, but like the point is that they're not so far off based on the cost.
Yeah. I would just move it down into the probably okay rather than the
sure.
Are okay.
And for the listeners' context, there's three tiers here. There's like average, probably okay, or like there's average good tier. There's the probably okay range, which is like underused stuff. Something else is good, so no one tries it. And then there's definitely bad. So the rest of the stuff in the average good tier would be the Hawk 290, which I think we can all agree with Moldy Crow is probably undercosted.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Also kind of functions like an ace, a pocket ace. Like Palov plays better than most pocket aces I've ever used. And it's not the role that it plays, right? It's not running to time, but it can boost and do some kind of annoying things. The YT-1300 in basically any of its forms, playable, probably immediately okay in hyperspace. Like, it's not bad.
Yeah.
Is it perfect? No, but it's one of those ships where if it's even more perfect, to Andrew's point, like, it can boost, and it's on a big base. Do we want that to be that good? and then Fire Spray, TIE SF, Resistance A, I kind of lump all those in. Some of that, the TIE SF maybe is an unknown, but those are good. This one, a lot of people will probably disagree with me on, but the YT-2400, I think, is costed correctly.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
I think a lot of people want to play Dash Poe.
Just based on four attack dice alone, I think if it was a locked front arc ship that had four attack dice, it would not be far off.
Right. Like, if no one's used the generic YT-2400 in like a mixed rebel list on a casual night, like, just try it out. Like, with a little bit of, and this next like, coordinate isn't a way to say that a ship is good, because coordinate can make any ship good. But if you can coordinate a focus to any of the YT-2400s, they do a ton of damage and they don't die right away.
Yeah. Two green dice is really good, it turns out.
And yeah, so in that range. And then the Star Fortress is a bit of an unknown, but I think we can say that it has enough pieces to probably be solid range, because of the way bombs work, and it's the only full 360 that I think we have with the bombs, as far as I'm concerned.
I'd also throw the Lambda in this group, since we forgot to put it on the list somewhere.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, absolutely. Ooh, Lambda is 100% in this gear. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And really good pilot abilities, so yes. And like, again, turret loose here, right? It's just a thing that's not a forward arc only. Then the probably okay tier is a whole bunch of stuff that I think, or we, you know, some people probably have used successfully, but it's just underused within the meta. So maybe it's almost costed right. Like, it's just stuff I'm not sure about. So the VCX, Scrug, YV666, Wookiees, and the ARC-170. ARC-170 might actually just be bad. And the Skrug might be too, I don't know.
I think the Skrug is fun.
I think.
I mean, I know a lot of people are messing around with Nora in the Arc 170 and proclaiming how good it was with her pilot ability. So I don't know enough because I haven't put it on the table, but.
The Arc 170, the problem, its dial is so much different from the Fire Spray. And if you think of in first edition, the Fire Spray, it was really easy to get into those blind spots and its side arcs. And the Arc 170 can't one, it's not being able to hard turn, like one hard turn, like the Fire Spray makes a big difference.
Its dial's really difficult. Yeah, that's the main reason it's in here, actually, because Nora is definitely good. The dial just makes it hard to use. The Skrug, I think, Nim is not bad. Like the things that you can do with the bombing Skrug, we covered that last episode. I think, I don't know, it's not terrible.
Well, yeah, and I think people sleep on the fact that it is still a 3-dice front arc on top of potentially a turret ship.
On 10 health, right?
Yeah. Like, the few times that I've played it, it's made it through every single game, and it's largely because people sleep on it. And it's maneuverable enough, and it's got enough tricks in its bag that I think it's above being bad.
Right. It's, you could almost like describe these as, you could take any of these ships, put them in hyperspace, and they're probably like immediately relevant, right? That's kind of my take on it. That like within the craziness that is extended, these kind of get lost in the noise, right? But if you distill the card pool down, like they would shine for what they are, and point adjustments, I don't know. Like this is a whole different conversation, but they're average tier, right? Potentially, and we just don't know what they are.
Mm-hmm.
For me, the questionable one is Wookiees. I'm not sure at their point cost that they are where they used to be. I mean, we don't want them where they used to be, obviously, but.
They gained a barrel roll, right? And then Reinforce is not bad yet. Like, Reinforce is still good.
Still so good, but it's not brokenly good like it used to be.
Correct, which is fantastic. Like, we should all be celebrating about that. But Wookiees seem like drastically underplayed to me, though. Like, Rebel, like anything in the Rebel faction, even. Just, like, people stopped trying. Like, all the best players just gave up after Coruscant.
Yeah.
Like, all of them. They saw it perform really poorly in decent numbers at Coruscant, and no one tried it after that. Like, until Dash showed up. So there's all this stuff in the Rebel faction where it's like, is it just terrible? I don't know.
No, that I agree with. I've tried to like fit something around it, but like the base one being 46 points seems a little high to me.
Possibly.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, mm-hmm.
And then the VCX, like, talk about a ship that has history, right? Like, no one wants to play Ghost Fend the game anymore. No one will say that out loud, right? But you know, the VCX has kind of got a big fan base because of where it's from, right? Like what it is. It's,
I mean,
some people really like that ship.
The design, the game design behind the ship is super cool. Like it has a bunch of slots, it has a weird thing that detaches, and it can shoot out the front or the back depending on like what weird secondary ship you equip to it. Like I think it's definitely among the most interesting things that have been designed for the game of X-Wing. It's just that, yeah, we saw it so abused by the end of 1.0.
Yeah, was that more TLT than
it was TLT. It was the double shot. It was.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's TLT. I think it's, I agree with Marshall that it was one of the more interesting pieces of game design that they put into the game. But I also, in 1.0 at least, thought that they over-designed it a little bit.
They did give it, like, a lot of stuff.
Probably over a little pushing from Disney about wanting to sell a lot of those models.
Make
the show. Yeah. Like.
But it's the ultimate card combo, right? Like, that's what it was.
Yeah.
It was the ultimate card combo list, because it was essentially a one-ship list in all of its
parts, but it was,
right?
Yeah, like, but what I'm saying is like it was easy to do that because it had every slot.
Right, which is its own design problem. Like anytime they add a ship that has too many upgrade slots, it's a long-term problem. But like, so the VCX is sort of like, it's the turret, right? Like it inhabits the space where like Andrew, you described Dash Rorik as a one ship list.
Yeah.
I think VCX sort of leads into a good conversation about like two ship lists in general. Mm-hmm. Like, do we want one to two ship lists to ever be more than average? I think is a good question. Like, should it ever be more than average? Should it ever be in the A or S tier? Because if it is it just an indication that a card combo is broken?
So it's definitely an interesting question, because I know there's a player base that do like the two card, the two ship, like meta, like they prefer that over flying the 3 to 4 ship, and maybe it's really hard to look at when you dissect it all together, because then you do have certain ships that could be this broken combination. But then at the same time, there could be something completely hidden out there, or at a very high floor level that is a two-ship list that just could, people just could be completely ignoring. Something like Brobots. Like, I did a ton of Brobot testing back when second edition was fresh. I tried throwing L3 in there. I tried throwing a Brobot with something else. And like my conclusion came to being that it's just better to load both Brobots up to the maximum. But at no point, it's a very good list. It definitely held its own. I went up against some crazy lists that I thought there was no way I could possibly beat them, and did, just because it was the entire, what's the word I'm looking for?
It was good enough.
Right.
Yeah, like it's good enough. Like that's what I was kind of getting to, though, is like it's okay for it to be in the average tier. I would describe Brobots as a list that can be in the average tier right now, but if it were ever S tier, something went wrong with control mechanics, right?
Yeah, so like that's definitely exactly what you're saying.
Then I guess you're getting into the question of should anything ever be S tier.
Well, but this is sort of what the conversation is somewhat about, right? Which is like, people want big base turrets to be more relevant, right? Or people say that they're undercosted or overcosted, right? We're going through a list here. I mean, the last set of ships in this list is the Aggressor, Decimator, Jumpmaster, Lancer, and the Y-Wing, besides Cavil and Drea, right? And like, what it leads to is something's going to be S tier. Something's going to be A tier. A lot of stuff is in the A tier, right? When we look at turrets in general, I think they can certainly be competitively viable, but they're dangerous. Like some of these ships are just dangerous if they're ever more than average. Like super primed Kylo is a great example of this. Like, yeah. I have the same opinion on the opposite side. Like, double reposition aces at high initiative can never be allowed to be above a certain power level because of what they are. Like, that's, I guess that's my overall point from the earlier discussion this week.
I mean, ideally, if point costs were balanced, then it would be okay. But I think part of the problem is, like, you have a card that's worth 10 points, and you have another card that's worth 10 points, but you put them both on one ship, and they're worth more than 20 points. Like, a combination is worth more than the sum of its parts, if that makes sense.
Sometimes. Right. Well, so, but that's a whole other topic, too, which is, like, the VCX is the living, breathing version of this, which is, like, combo wing, right? Like, do we want single ship card interactions to ever be better than a list used coherently by a skilled player? Right?
I think they've done a very good... So with the exception of Dash Rorik, I mean, would you say that is the first taste of something like that we've experienced in second edition?
Every Boba list has shades of it, right? Now, not to the extreme. Like, I don't want to sound like I don't want turrets to be playable. They should be playable. They have to be playable, because otherwise we're just playing Ace Wing, right? But like, the combinations available to Boba as a single ship is doing what I'm describing.
So let's zoom out for a second, because I think a question that we're sort of dancing around is, what makes a negative play experience? And I think kind of what you're saying is that a negative play experience is created by just like going up against something that you can't do anything about. Like, it doesn't matter how good you are at positioning your ships. It doesn't matter how good you are at making the right action decisions. It's just whatever you're going up against does not care about what you're doing. So you're not, it's that thing of you're not playing the game. So is that more likely, is that experience more likely to be caused by going up against a single ship that just kind of does the same thing every turn and doesn't really have to make decisions? Is that kind of like what you mean by it like a single ship list, or what's essentially a single ship list being too good?
Well, so let me be really clear about something, right? Like, from a competitive point of view, I think once we get to like an actual tournament, right? Like, I enjoy the meta analysis and all the counterplay that's out there. So like, everything is an MPE is a good statement to say. Like, when I play competitively, I just assume everything is an MPE.
Sure.
And then it's fun again, right? Okay. And that's even true for 2.0. More what I'm like concerned with here is gameplay, right? Like the mechanics of what FFG will emphasize long term. I think this question of like one and two ship lists sort of raises that general concern of like, is that something that they want to be more than just something you kind of experiment with?
So yeah, there's two things to that point. Yeah. There's two things that, when we are putting these, and I know we talked about this earlier in the week, but when you are putting ships at such a high cost, you have to really kind of like make them viable as some way or another. With that being said, with the two separate format that we're going to be going into, I had, let's not say like a negative play experience, but like when I was running the Han nonstop, it was like the first time I got caught in a barrage bomber list. It just made Han I tried my best to not get him get caught. And then the second he did get caught, that one agility just kind of popped with having three barrage rockets come in and redline. It felt bad. But at the same time, you got to remember that was in the extended format. The second you switch format to hyperspace, those barrage bombers are no longer a problem. And then you're going to have Han just wreaking havoc all over the place and without that kind of counterplay. So there is that very fine line that we're talking about.
Yeah. And there's a fine line of balance between all of these various play styles and types, right? Where, you know, like, I think there's a lot of turrets that don't bother aces at all. There's some that are direct counters. Right. Mm-hmm. And then there's all kinds of generic lists at a high enough ship count that theoretically, to what you're describing, Andrew, should always put kind of a ceiling on what that turret can do. Because it's low enough agility. And I guess the baseline thing that means we'll probably always be okay is that FFG seems fairly committed to making sure that the defense for these ships is reasonably bad.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And that, like, And I really didn't want this whole thing to come off as like I hate turrets, because I definitely hated them in 1.0. Trying to be more open minded to them in 2.0, you know. But FFG seems to have done a whole lot of work on like two fronts, which is you have to rotate, you don't get a full 360. Oh, and your ship dies, right? Mm-hmm. And then like maybe that's enough that no matter what they do with the point costs, like it'll always be semi balanced.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's the big. That last bit, I think you hit the nail on the head about the big change between 1.0 and 2.0, and kind of what worries me about where they are now, same time, is like, in 1.0, what was really bad about turret wing was that you could limp away with one health more often than not.
Han's going to do that to you in 2.0.
Like, they can, but it's a lot less likely in 2.0.
I mean, you're going to say the same thing about Kylo or Luke, because, I mean, there's been times where, like, I'll have either of them on the table and just supernatural. I mean, granted, they're not doing damage like the turrets will be doing, but what I guess what Zach's saying is that, like, they could be limping away, but they're still outputting that damage with like TLT or something like that, which in order for them to be relevant, they have to be kind of in the fight a little bit more.
Well, so yeah, does it circle back to they were also aces, right? Like, aces is like a super generic term, but they could joust, they could also double reposition, and they were also reasonably defensible.
Yeah, so I'm not advocating for fat turrets, but if something costs 150 points, like how good should it be? I feel like there are people, they just dislike turrets so much, they want them to cost 150 points and be awful. And it's like, if it costs 150 points, it should be good. I don't know how good it should be, but...
Right. But, well, so that's the crux of it, though, right? Which is like Dash is expensive. Dash is really good. What, like, people will probably take issue with the fact that Dash without Rorik is not S tier, right?
Mm-hmm.
But like, how else can Dash be S tier, right? If he's not either doing something that ups his defense or messing around with some other offensive mechanic. I guess that's my overall point, right? Which is just like that 150 point ship being better than like three or four available counters in the meta. I don't know that that makes for a better game.
Yeah.
Should they cap the number of points you can spend on a ship?
Oh, they kind of have, right? By like
say 110,
right?
100.
They made upgrades really expensive.
But that makes ships like Han and Dash impossible to field competitively, I feel like. There's so even Rey, like, I don't know. I run Rey pretty bare bones, and I think she's still like 104. Like, it gets pretty close.
Which is pretty cheap, though, for what you're getting with Rey. Right? Like, I mean, that's 100 points for Rey as a ship is not crazy. But, like, the upgrades in general, we've talked about this in the past. Upgrades are expensive. So it's also sort of like a natural... It's another thing that just sort of pushes down on combo wing.
Yeah.
Which is... Like, if Han Gunner was correctly costed, some of those Boba lists look a little different. But, like, you could tweak one or two cards within Resistance, and if they're ever an issue to a particular, you know, to the Falcon or whatever, you can actually price it out of existence for sure.
Sure, yeah.
Yeah. All right, so there is one thing I want to address on those turrets that may be expensive is that TIE Aggressor. That thing. it's not even that. It's there's just no turrets to take for it. Like, it's like, yeah.
It's good with barrage rockets, right?
Sure.
But
is it better than a bomber?
No. Like, Kestel's kind of good against force users. No, but Kestel's actually pretty good against a force user. But it's bad. Okay. It's bad. We should end this with saying aggressors, decimators, jump masters, lancers, and Y-wings are actually terrible, and there might be a couple that need to be in there. Right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, the aggressor was bad in 1.0. It's bad in 2.0. It's a ship that just shouldn't have ever existed.
There's just no place for it. It has never done anything well.
It got thrown in 1.0 as a, here you go, Imperials, you now have a ship that can take a turret upgrade.
Sure.
They need a 3-point TLT.
We were worried about the police for a second, but that did not, I think that showed up a little bit like right when it dropped, but after that it did not go anywhere. The police being four generic aggressors with TLT.
And lightweight
as frame. A response to Thug Life, which was four Y-Wings with TLT.
The Jumpmaster knows what it did, and that's why it's here.
It deserves its punishment.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It's in the stockade until we decide to release it, which will probably be never.
Hopefully. No, I want to see Jumpmasters. Again,
I want to see them be ordnance carriers. I want to see them be like reasonable torpedo launchers, but without guidance chips.
So Deadeye Scouts. All right.
You heard it here first. We're calling for a return of Deadeye Scouts.
So to end on a positive note, though, with some of this, like using turrets, though, can actually be fun, right? Because most of them most of them do actually need to try and stay at Ark now, right? I just want to reemphasize that.
Yeah, I love flying Ray. I mean, like, Ray is a blast.
Yeah, I mean, I think turrets are still fun. Even some of the ones that are in the expensive range. Like, I guess my thing is, like, some creative thinking gets around a lot of problems. So, like, I, going into this episode, I'm going to give my Lancer a little push here. Going into this episode, I decided to try and play some Lancer lists and see if I could figure out if it really was just terrible. And I ended up coming up with, like, a Bumpmaster build with it that actually was pretty effective.
I beg to differ.
The people that were down to agility would disagree with you, Andrew.
Oh, yeah, well, the problem was Guri basically did all the work in that list, and then... Anyway, Dad, go ahead.
That one game I played with you, yes, I misflew Ketsu, and she didn't do anything. In the second game, I played Ketsu much better, and, like, needless to say, Rex LeBrath at one agility is a very upset Rex LeBrath.
Oh, yeah.
But I was running Ketsu with Intimidation and the Shadowcaster title. So basically, like, guaranteeing that something at range one was going to be down to agility for Guri, and Captain Seaver was the other two parts of the list to then just chew apart. And, like, it worked quite well. Like, it is 83 points of bumping, so I'm not entirely saying it's great. But it fit a role, and it did its job really well once I figured out, like, how to play it. And, like, leaning into its, you know, wanting to go fastness, like, just leaning into, all right, I'm just going to bump into things, and that's fine.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, again.
No, so we've been talking a lot about turrets, but we didn't talk about the turret upgrade slot at all.
I don't think we need... I think they're overpriced, period.
They're rubbish on anyone who's not Cavill.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, so, yeah. Go ahead, John.
Yeah, I mean, this is a place where that you want to be careful. You don't want them to be too good.
Yeah,
sure.
Like, I remember when TLT was introduced, I remember a lot of people were skeptical on how good it could be, and then it turned out to be too good.
Right, but I mean, two dice attacks at range two, I think you're not... Anything that can take them isn't really benefiting much from that. They're already in a position that they don't have that much reposition, and they will completely falter, but I still don't see them being anywhere near the top ranks.
Yeah, I mean,
those turrets particularly, yeah.
I mean, anything that can take them gets really sad when anything's at range 2-1 of them.
Right. It's almost like an insurance to make sure that they have a shot at some point. Like, I think that's all it really is that what is dorsal turret, like 4 points?
Yeah.
So it's really just a 4-point insurance that you will have a shot, hoping that, I mean, other than that, that's all it is. With the exception of maybe Cavill, Andrea.
I mean, Andrea's not even, like, caring about the turret itself.
Right, she's buying the arc, yeah.
Yeah.
Same with, like, the Hawk pilots. Like, they're just buying additional arc.
Right.
They don't care about the turret itself. Really.
They're buying moldy. They don't care about anything else. All
right. I feel like when the turret arc is only 2, it just makes it a lot more tolerable. On a K-Wing or like the Star Fortress, like the fact that it's mobile. If the mobile arc was also 3, that would be murderous.
Right.
But it being 2 makes it okay.
Yeah. They seem like they were really careful from a bunch of angles, and that was one of them, which is, you know, if they did get any of the costs wrong, then there's a whole bunch of components, you know, related to turrets that sort of naturally suppresses them. But my overall point is we should celebrate that, not ask them to change that.
No, yeah, absolutely. All right. Anything else about turrets before we close out?
Cool.
All right. Shoutouts. Anyone have shoutouts they want to... all right, so... A couple of new patrons, Andrew Lynn, thank you, William Key, and Mike Bird. I want to thank you guys for shooting us some of your delicious Patreon money. Again,
if you are... The internet dollars.
The internet dollars. again, we'll probably have another episode after this before we close out the IG-88 Altarts. And then they will be in the vault forever. So if you wanted to get your hands on some of them, the only way to get them right now is through the Patreon. And then we will be going on to our next alt arts or other Patreon swag.
I got a quick shout out, Andrew. Just shout out to everybody who signed up for the Liberty Vassal League so far. I think I've got about 10 players or so.
Yeah.
Hopefully a fun little community builder there. But yeah, more definitely. Welcome.
Anyone else? All right, we'll go with we got some upcoming events. Zach, you got the tournament at Gameskeep on the 26th.
Yep.
And it's Hangar Bay, right?
Hangar Bay, bring two lists. You can swap lists before pairings are made. If you don't bring a second list, you're getting HL Seeks.
Nice. So then we also have some announcements for the Hyperspace Trials. On April 6th, it's Glenn Burney's Games and Stuff. They always have a huge crowd there, and they do such a good job. They basically provide you lunch. It's a great store to go at. It's huge, and really good people there. What is this? How do you pronounce this? Nyack? Nyack, New York?
Yeah, that's right.
Okay. Their regional, or hyperspace trial, I should say, is on April 13th. And then Red Caps is on May 4th. That is one of our local stores, so we will be doing some extra stuff for that one. We will probably be streaming. We'll be handing out some sweet swag, so we'll have more information on that closer to the date. I know registration will probably open up sometime early February, so keep an eye out for that. All right, guys, I think that's it for this episode. I want to thank everyone for listening, and if you have any questions, comments, concerns, go to our Facebook page and you can add them there. Throw us whatever. If you want to, you disagree about our terror discussion or whether you think Treacherous is going to be terrible or great, throw it on there and let us know. All right. Have a good night, guys.
See ya.
Good night. Bye, everyone.